Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It's time for the seventh inning stretch. As always, I'm your host, Armando Angulo, and as always, I am joined by my very good friend and the co-host, Justin Wells. We got a lot to get into, an exciting time in postseason baseball. The LCSs are going on, and it's about getting to crunch time, getting close to that World Series and the pinnacle of what baseball is. Justin, how are you feeling? It's been a couple of good series. The Indians have proven to have a leg up on the Blue Jays, but you know there's a lot to play for still. Toronto is in the midst of possibly winning Game Four. And then the Dodger Cubs series has been phenomenal. The split one game, but I know we're going to touch on the LDS still. We're still going to touch on all that. Justin, how are you feeling about baseball almost coming to an end? First and foremost.
It's making me a little bit bittersweet, and it's also the fact that we're going to be left solely with stories of Curt Schilling running for Senate in the offseason for a bit. That's going to, you know, that's going to drive me insane. If anybody hasn't seen that, he of the bloody sock, not to be confused with Trevor Bauer of the bloody finger, which we'll talk about later, has announced he will be running for Senate in the bluest of possible states, despite the fact that he is the reddest of possible men. I give Curt Schilling a lot of crap on this podcast, and he's deserved all of it.
I concur 100%, my friend. But let's touch on the LDS, man. Let's start with what happened with Cleveland, Boston. I know we wanted to touch on something that's kind of revolutionary as far as, you know, the modern game and how it's evolved, and that's using your best reliever not in the ninth, but in the most difficult of positions.
Yeah, the highest leverage spots. Andrew Miller has been used by Cleveland pretty much every place but getting saves. I really like it. I really do. I mean, the ninth inning isn't always by nature the most high leverage outs that you're possibly going to get. So you want to get the outs that you need to in order to get to the ninth inning. Like, I think that there's been a premium in baseball placed on thinking the last three outs are always going to be the hardest to get. So you might need your best relief arm to do that, but I would like to see a study about, you know, where games are blown more often than not. I'm willing to bet it's in the seventh and eighth inning more than the ninth inning. And no, sure, people, it's because closers typically are better pitchers than the rest of your bullpen, but it can't be that. The difference between your average closer and your average setup man can't be that stark.
No, I concur, man. I concur 100%. I think far too often we live in this fantasy world. And, you know, it's a copycat league, man. So when the closer developed and everybody said, oh, the ninth, it doesn't mean it was the most efficient thing. But, you know, if you lose games and everybody's doing it, then fuck it. You can't be, you know, held accountable. You can't be pointed a finger at because that's, you know, the status quo in the game. But it doesn't necessarily, like you said, make it right or make it, the highest leverage situation in a game. We often, especially in this postseason, have seen managers take into account what the score is, how important the guys in the lineup are hitting, and we saw that in both series with the Indians and the Red Sox, and then the Dodgers and the Cubs. And for me, it's hats off to Tito and hats off to Dave Roberts, because just for having the balls to do that, because it's hard to go against the grain in something, and it's easy if that doesn't work for you to just, you know, get chewed out in media. And we're not seeing that. We're seeing it succeed. We're seeing them be making really good decisions, and they're paying off.
Oh, they absolutely are. Now, what I want to really talk about, because I thought a much ballsier move than the Indians using Andrew Miller wherever, just because of the fact that the back end of the Indians bullpen and the entire Indians bullpen all season has been incredibly shut down, was Dave Roberts, who's had a really, really good bullpen throughout the season. You know, rides Dayton one time too many in the seventh inning of game five of the NLDS, possibly one of the best innings of baseball, and perhaps the craziest inning of baseball I've watched in a long, long time. I can't say ever, because I'm pretty sure I've seen something more nuts, but this was up there as far as entertainment value. Dayton gives up a two-run homer to Heisey, can't record any outs, and he brings Kenley Jansen into a really hairy situation. Jansen proceeds to get out of the inning and get Anthony Rendon swinging with the bases loaded in a bat that I thought was going to give me a heart attack. And I'm not even a fan of either of these teams. How did you feel during that point in time, Armando?
I was a mess, man. I was excited. I thought, you know, we were texting back and forth, and I was really, I thought it was the right move. I thought Kenley Jansen in that position, it is what it is, man. You got to win. Dayton, like you said, really didn't go out and do his job. He really just got shellacked, and it was something that was very disappointing. I was surprised, actually, to see him on the LCS roster there afterwards. But for me, it was really nerve-wracking, man, because it's something that I'm not used to. It's something that we really haven't done with Kenley, not only not this year, but ever. And, you know, he had 50 pitches. He gave me 51, and he really did the job. He closed the door in those two innings and two and a third, and he made it happen. I think it's really important to give him credit as much as Dave Roberts, and then give Clayton Kershaw credit to coming in and closing the game, because, you know, for these ball players, sometimes they could be prima donnas, sometimes they could be me first and not team first, or they're so accustomed to having a role and being so specified and doing that they don't really want to pitch in that in whenever you want them to. They're the ninth inning man, and I actually heard Bobby Valentine on the radio not too long ago talking about this after that series, and saying that there was some times when he was on the Mets that there was, he didn't use names or anything, but that there was a pitcher that had a good year, and in the following season, you know, he was being used by Bobby in a variety of ways. And then the following season, the agent came to him and said, you know what, we're not going to do this. We're only going to give one inning. And Bobby said, that's fine, but I control that inning. And I think that's very important that the manager has that control, and that these players don't get to dictate when they come into the game. Ultimately, they're high paid assets, but it's a team game. Baseball is the ultimate team game. And it's very important to sacrifice some things for the team, especially in these situations. And when it's win or go home, and the Dodgers have been here before, and it's a little bit, I think they're feeling a little bit of sense of urgency. Like, this is, the window might not be there forever. And you know, Clayton's been a revelation this time around. Very stark contrast to what we've seen before from him in the postseason. I like what I'm seeing from my scrappy Dodgers. It's no different than what we've seen all year long and what Dave Roberts has done. I just think he's, taking it a step further and being a little bit more creative and, you know, just throwing it out there, seeing what sticks, and really not holding anything back. Like Buck Showalter, we saw him not use the best pitcher in baseball. Guy had 0.56 ERA and didn't get into the game. And
pitcher in baseball, he didn't use a relief pitcher coming who was in the midst of the greatest best season ever.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Statistically, ERA-wise, best ERA ever for a season. And that bit him in the butt. And I think Dave Roberts and Tito, in that regard, it's kind of learned from that. And Tito's been doing this for a little bit, so it's nice to see. But I think Dave Roberts said, you know what, that's not going to be me. I'm going to use all the bullets in the chamber, and I'm going to leave it all out there, and hopefully we can come out on top. And that's exactly how it panned out, and I couldn't be happier, man.
Yeah, I sort of share that sentiment, just because you don't necessarily want to see your arch rivals. Which, in the National League East, the concept of an arch rival, because none of the five teams in that division have ever been good at the same time, is, you know, it's something transient. I guess the closest thing you really have is the Mets and the Braves. But I don't particularly like this Nationals team for a variety of reasons, namely Bryce Harper. But I don't know that I've ever made that clear enough. But But the fact is, they still haven't won. They're a team that's also, their window is weird because they do have Harper, who right now is a giant question mark as far as what you're going to get out of him, because you're either going to get that ridiculous historical season that he put up two seasons ago, or you get the tremendous inconsistency that he put up this season. But have you seen a Dusty Bakering more than the seventh inning of that Dusty Bakering? Six pitchers to get through a half inning.
Yeah, and I didn't even know how to feel about that, because I get it. You want to play the odds or play the percentages, and you have analytics and this, that, and the third. But we've seen Dusty Baker in the past tinker too much or not tinker enough at times in the past in the postseason. And we've seen him not be able to succeed in the postseason time and time again. And I think it's something to do with Dusty Baker, actually. When Clayton got Javi Baez to fly out, when Kenley Jansen got the outs and stuff, you just saw it on Dusty Baker's face. His face said everything, like, oh, here we go again. And I think that's the narrative with Dusty Baker, is he's not really winning the big games. He's a very experienced manager, and he's a good manager. You can't discredit him on that. But in the postseason, I think he overthinks things sometimes. I don't think he trusts his players as much. I think if you're making six pitching changes in an inning, you clearly don't trust your relievers.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's, you know, you're talking about this postseason reputation that he's developed. He's 0-8 in elimination games.
And there you go. And those are the ones that count, my friend.
Yeah, those are the ones that are why everybody's going to say that Dusty Baker is a very good manager, but not a great manager. Because you can't fault Dusty Baker for a lot of what he's done in his career. He's a great people manager. He righted what looked like a very toxic mix in that Nationals clubhouse. Like, of all the things you could have heard and said about the Nats this year, the one thing that you basically can't pull out of that is that their clubhouse was a mess. Under
right,
Matt
and that's
Williams,
a
absolutely.
Stark contrast. Absolutely.
Yeah, they were
stark
a professional
contrast.
Team.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what you expect from Dusty Baker. Dusty Baker's a good manager, like we said, but he's proven time and again that in the big moments, whether it's him or it's his guys, I mean, Dusty Baker's not throwing a pitch and he's not hitting, but if you're making six moves in an inning, man, for me, that's tinkering a little too much. That's not having faith in your guys, having faith in your defense, and being able to get outs. I mean, I know the postseason is a different beast, man, and you play out by out, and everything is magnified to the nth degree, right? But you got to go with your guns that got you there. You still have to have faith in the guys that did the business for 162. You know what I mean? And he didn't do that. I don't feel like he did that.
No, I mean, if you want the total evidence of that, the Nationals are paying Max Scherzer $210 million, and at the first sign of adversity, and only 99 pitches, a solo homer to Jock Peterson, who, you know what, regardless of how good you are, Jock Peterson's kind of an all-or-nothing swinger. Every so often, he's going to put one over a wall against you. He did that to Scherzer. It wasn't necessarily a sign that Scherzer was tiring. He was at 99 pitches. Like, Scherzer can go deeper than 99 pitches in a win-or-go-home game. That's where he really has to trust his staff more. He's always been bad at starting pitchers.
Yeah, and Scherzer was in FU mode up until there. I mean, he was mowing us down, and his, like we discussed, his FU mode is probably one of, if not the most impressive, you know, switch-ons in baseball. When he's on, Max Scherzer is damn near unhittable. Jock ran into one, but I agree with you 100%. You have to give him a little bit longer range. He was dominating us up until that point. Jock got one over on him, and that was it. Dusty Baker was rattled. He doesn't have it anymore. I'm not positive, but I don't know if this series pans out the way it does if Max Scherzer stays in for another inning.
I don't know that it does either. I don't, but you know what? That's why they let Dusty Baker make those managerial decisions, and the Washington Nationals are now playing golf, much to my chagrin.
Yes.
Now, there's one other thing I want to talk about in this particular series as it relates to the Dodgers, specifically Clayton Kershaw, which was, he got shelled in the seventh inning of both these games, and it brought back Clayton Kershaw, now no longer seen as a choke artist because of the fact that he has delivered for his team in big spots, unlike a certain other expensive pitcher who pitches in Boston, whose name I won't mention. But Clayton Kershaw had, you know, his ERA in the seventh inning in playoff games has been extremely high. And outside, I think, maybe game four of the Mets series last year, he hasn't gotten very deep into a lot of postseason games. Both of the games he pitched in the Nat series, seventh inning was his bugbear. Now, pitching on short rest in game four, it probably didn't help him there. But we saw it on Sunday night in game two of the Cubs series, Clayton Kershaw destroying another myth.
Yeah, that Clayton Kershaw against the Cubs in game two, man, was what we've come to expect during the regular season and what we probably expected to see, you know, years past in the postseason, but it just hasn't been the case. He really was sharp. He was really on top of his game. He was really focused. The team played well. You know, there was some moments where in the eighth, you know, he was having a tough time with his command and stuff, and Javi Baez was coming up, and Dave Roberts went out to talk to him, and he said, no, I could get him. I could get him. He got him to fly out to the track, so my heart was, you know, in my throat, but he did the job. And that, I think, is the difference between Dave Roberts right now and Dusty Baker, is that Dave Roberts knows his horse, trusts his horse, and says, you know what, big guy? You say you can do this, go do this. He trusted him with the ninth, with the last two outs, you know, in game five of the LDS, and then to go out there in game two and give us what he did. And you know, and Adrian Gonzalez hitting that early home run, really, it made it to where I think I felt like we would be in the game. I didn't know if we would be able to shut them out because, in all honesty, the Cubs, 103 wins, you know, their offense hasn't exactly been lights out, but a run isn't too much to ask for out of them, especially under the circumstances. I was really impressed by him. I was really, really happy for him because, like you said, there has been a bit of a rhetoric that he is, you know, a choke artist who can't deliver when it matters the most. And that's complete farce. We've seen, you know, now that he's actually coming into his own and really carrying this team. And him and Kenley Jansen deserve so much credit this postseason because they've really proven to be leaders of this ball club. And I think the most surprising there is Kenley Jansen. For us, Kenley Jansen, as a fan, he's soft-spoken, doesn't say much. But this postseason, we've seen what the team means to him, what winning a championship means to him. And I think this has a lot to do with Dave Roberts as well. We didn't see that under Mattingly. We didn't see Mattingly go outside the box or trust his guys that much. We didn't see that really under Joe Torre. Dave Roberts is fresh blood. He's new school mentality as far as managing is concerned. He's doing it his way. And by all means, man, long may it continue because he's really doing a great job. And I think this series is going to be a big, big test for us. But if we can get by this and finally get back to a World Series then and get that pennant, Dave Roberts, for me, possibly, you know, in my lifetime, the best Dodger manager that we've seen, even after one season. Because, I mean, aside from Tom of the Sword, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a, you know, got a Hall of Famer ahead of
him. Right. Aside from Tom Lasorda. But after that, we've really struggled to have a consistent good manager for a long time. I mean, Joe Torre's proven or whatever, but he didn't do it for us. He didn't deliver for us. And Don Mattingly, we saw in recent years, be terrible, and he's terrible in Miami. And so this is refreshing. I think the front office made an excellent choice with him. I think they were deliberate. They were well thought out. They knew that he was the right man. And another thing I want to touch on is, you know, the LDS was the first time two African-American or two minority managers managed a series in the postseason against each other.
That's positive.
That is phenomenal. Phenomenal, my friend. It shows progress. I'm proud of my team for being one that is employing, you know, a minority manager, and he's proven to be worth every penny and really proven to be a sharp, sharp baseball mind. Not that anybody doubted him, but didn't have much experience, and he's just proving to show, you know, his worth. And I couldn't be happier for him. As a player, I loved him when he was on the Dodgers. You know, as a player, I really enjoyed him even on the Red Sox and his career, because the way he played is the way he manages. And always hard, always going hard, always trying to do and play the game the right way. And for me, I couldn't be happier with our choice, man. And I think that in the long term, this could potentially bring us a ring. If not this year, I could see it happening sooner than later, because I think he's the right man for the job.
Yeah, Roberts is starting to look like one of those managers who I tend to break up. Let me frame this so everybody understands kind of my thought process here. I tend to group managers in three different segments, right? I think there are certain managers who will make their team perform below their talent level. You know, and for instance, there we can use a manager who I would point out who did this has been probably Robin Ventura in Chicago. I feel harsh on saying it about Chip Hale, but you can say it about Chip Hale in Arizona. Effectively, a manager who gets less out of the team than he should. I think there are managers who get exactly the talent level of their team out of their team. Those examples of that would be John Farrell, Terry Collins, Dusty Baker. And then you have your managers who get more out of their team than you'd expect. And, you know, the three guys I think of that come to mind right there when I think of that tier are Jeff Bannister, Joe Maddon, and I think Dave Roberts is going to get himself into that particular segment of manager.
Yeah, and that's great company to be with. I think you know, Bannister, like you said, doesn't get enough credit for what he's doing sometimes in Texas. But yeah, and Joe Maddon, I mean, 103 games in Chicago, that team has been built to win, and you can't take anything away from them. But I think under the circumstances and everything else, Dave Roberts this year has been just phenomenal. And yeah, he deserves to be in that conversation and deserves to be known as somebody that makes the most out of a situation and can really over deliver. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wish there was a metric for tracking this, because one of the things that Major League Baseball doesn't have a great hold of is, as far as statistically quantifying things, is you can statistically quantify any play that happens in a baseball game, but I don't feel like they statistically quantify managerial decisions in that same manner, right? Because if you can attribute like a certain value to a player, like, you know, for instance, how many wins over replacement are you worth? There has to be a similar way to kind of track that about a manager, right? There has to.
Yeah, there has to be. Yeah, I don't know if anybody's keeping that, but there absolutely has to be. Yeah.
Yeah. If anybody listening to this actually is able to knows anything about that, I'd be intrigued. Please make sure to find us via Twitter and bring this to our attention, because it's something that we probably would really be interested to read.
Absolutely. Please do. If you have that type of information, I would love to read up on that and really know how that works and really know where Dave Roberts stands. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so going back now into the National League Championship Series, there's one player that you mentioned earlier, the man who hit the eighth inning warning track ball off of Clayton Kershaw, who's really kind of stepped out in this postseason. Javi Baez. That guy is he's a strange yet intriguing baseball player.
Yeah, he is. And for me, Javi Baez, I think, you know, Joe Maddon really loves Javi Baez, the way he plays the game. During the season, he was asked, like, we saw Chris Bryant move around. We saw Zobrist move around. And we saw Javi Baez play third, play second. And Joe Maddon's logic there is, you know, it's all analytics for Joe Maddon. So he's sitting there and in an interview, he says, I want Javi Baez playing wherever the ball's hit the most. And that just shows the confidence he has in him defensively. We've seen how good he is defensively. We've seen the power he has. Javi Baez, if he can put it together on a consistent basis, is a special talent, my friend.
Yeah,
special ball player.
He's kind of like Daniel Murphy with the ability to run the bases and field the ball.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's a great, great ball player. I think, I think we've been hearing a lot about him. You know, Jorge Soler. The Cubs have had some Latin names out there that we've been talking about for quite some time. They just haven't really been able to put it together completely on a consistent basis. And I'm not saying he's doing that still, especially with the bat. He still, strikes out quite a bit. But in this playoffs, he's been a little bit of a revelation. We're seeing a little bit different Javi Baez. We're seeing a more refined, more focused, more confident Javi Baez.
He's the most interesting man in baseball. He's not, but I mean, you get the point.
No, absolutely, man. He's definitely worth the discussion. And I can see why Joe Maddon really, really, really does like him and make sure that he figures out a way to get him in the lineup, not just offensively, but for that glove. And he is almost second to none defensively with that leather, because he can play multiple infield positions and look like he's been playing there for 10 years. And really, he has great reflexes, great reactions, a great arm. He's really, really a treat to watch, man.
Yeah, the only one he's not going to play with any regularity is going to be short, because of the fact that Addison Russell is just kind of amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, not with the bat and not recently.
No, not with the bat, but defensively, Addison Russell is amazing. With the bat, there's a consistency issue there.
Yeah, the man that started over Corey Seager in the All-Star game, that guy.
Well, you know, they were stuffing the ballot box.
Yeah, I get it, but that's why I think sometimes, I'm not saying the fan vote shouldn't count, but it should only be a percentage of the votes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, Addison Russell right now in the postseason basically is the equivalent of a giant hole in your lineup.
Yeah. Yeah.
His slash line is a 0.45, 0.87, 0.132.
Oh my God. That is god awful numbers, bro.
For anybody who doesn't quite know what a slash line is, average on base percentage and OPS. OPS is just on base plus slugging. Oh, sorry. Actually, no. It's a 0.4. No, I went wrong with the slash. Slash is average on base slugging. His slugging percentage and his average are the same. He hasn't walked. He has one hit in 22 at bats. He's not been good. No, a lot of the Cubs hitters haven't been good in the postseason.
We've been watching them scuffle, and I think that's what's given. I mean, we saw how good the Cubs were during the regular season. We split the series 4-3. I think this is a very even series. We saw it, but I think what's giving us good, new life is we got to steal one in Chicago, man, and we get to play three at home, and they're not hitting. They're just not hitting. And it's not, like you said, it's not just Addison Russell.
Anthony Rizzo. Rizzo's at a .43.
Jason Hayward has been atrocious all season.
Jason Hayward's been, all season. I was going to say, if you're just isolating him in the playoffs, that's a different spot. Chris Bryant, on the other hand, is the only one. Chris Bryant and Javi Baez are the two of these guys hitting.
Yeah, and I mean, Chris Baez is the MVP of the league, so.
Yep, Chris Bryant is the MVP. Chris Bryant's great.
Yes, he really is. I mean, I was looking at his numbers today, and then I didn't think he was that close to hitting 300. The man hit 298 on the season.
Yeah, and the only thing he has to do is cut down on the strikeouts, which I don't know that he ever will, just because of the fact that the way in which the game is played, you're going to go with you're going to go with the power option ahead of the non-power option.
I mean, bro, if you're hitting 298 with 40 bombs, you strike out as much as you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're still hitting 300 and you're getting on base. Your on base percentage is great. He has a decent eye. I think Chris Bryant has proven to be every bit the hype that we expected him to be. And well deserved of that MVP.
So tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, game 3, pick of the hill for Chicago is Jake Arrieta. His last start in Los Angeles, I believe, was last season, right? Or did he pitch there this year?
No, I believe it was last season.
It was
the
no-hitter, right?
Yes, it was. We sent him that mound, too, because we're classy like that.
I don't think anybody should send Jake Arrieta anything, but that's just me. and he's going up against Rich Hill, who's struggled this postseason. So a definite pitching advantage to the Cubs in that one. The thing I'm more intrigued with is actually, as far as the Dodgers pitching, it's not so much to see how Hill's going to handle this one, because I think he's got enough experience, I think, to know to change what's not working. It's going to be game 4. How much of a leash does Julio Urias really have?
I think if he starts off and commands a strike zone like he does, like we've seen him be able to do, we saw him coming in relief during the NLDS, and he did a good job. That says a lot of a 20-year-old kid. So I think if Julio Urias can go out there and give me 6 solid innings and maybe keep him to 1 or 2 runs and keep us in the ball game, that's more than I can ask for him. But he's very, very, very capable of that. For me, I'm excited to see it. I don't think we've seen enough of him in this postseason. I think we should have probably saw him start one of the Hill starts, but it is what it is, man. He came out and he was ready when we called upon him in the out of the bullpen, and he did his job. I think he's ready. I think the moment won't be too big for him. I think game 4 is going to be, if we could win today and he can keep us in the ball game tomorrow, that's going to make a very, very interesting going forward. I think that Julio Urias has all the talent in the world. It's just whether, he can put it together on that night. And I think he has every bit to do it, especially at home, especially with the Cubs scuffling a little bit. And I mean, tonight, Jason Hayward's out of the lineup for Soler. I don't know if I like that or not, but it shows that Joe Maddon is concerned. And I think that our pitchers have enough, and Julio Urias is a piece of that. I think he has enough talent to do it. Your concern is always with a young pitcher that the nerves might get to him or whatever, but he already got a little taste of the postseason in a big spot. He did well, he's proven all year that the moment isn't too big for him. I just don't know how long he can give us in the game, but if he could give me 6 innings, I'll be more than happy with that, man.
Yeah, I mean, and there's also the other thing to bring up, which is they have nobody else to start that game anyway.
Right, which is kind of disappointing. I mean, we spent money on pitching. We have, Ryu in the past. We've had guys, and Brandon McCarthy,
Scott Kazmir. I mean,
Scott Kazmir. What the left, Brett Anderson. So we're definitely struggling there, man. But if Julio Urías can go out there and do his job, and I'm not asking for a shutout, I'm not asking for 10 Ks, I'm not asking for anything, man. I'm just asking for the kid to go out there, command the strike zone, get ahead in the count, and let the fielders do their job. And I think if that's the case, then we have a good chance in game four as well, man.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, all you need from him is 15 to 18 outs.
Yes, sir.
That's really it.
That would be more than I would be over the moon with that.
Now let's shift gears to the American League, where the matchup was set at the time we recorded last week. Cleveland have gone out and taken the first three games in this series. We're currently in the eighth inning of Game 4, with Toronto looking like they will stave off elimination for today. This is the one where actually the best pitching matchup of the two between Corey Kluber and Aaron Sanchez, but didn't quite work out that way, at least for Kluber, who labored early and couldn't get very deep into the game. And Aaron Sanchez, he can't work deep into games right now, because that's just the way in which the Blue Jays are trying to manage the rest of his career.
Yeah, I think the game today, it's not, the Indians shouldn't be concerned. I think they did their job, man. They won the two at home. They took one in Toronto. Even if they lose, even if they lose the next one in Toronto as well, they go back home with two chances to eliminate the Blue Jays at home. And that's, you can't ask for more than that, man. The pitching has been phenomenal. Like you said, Kluber wasn't exactly the sharpest today, but that's okay. I mean, pitching on the road, it's late in the season. Stuff happens like this, man. He wasn't terrible. I mean, he gave up what, two runs?
It's two runs over. The issue there was, he only got through five innings because he really labored. He was living with a lot of base runners today.
Yeah, no, I can understand that, man. And yeah, he labored completely. But if you could still give me five innings when you're not the sharpest and only give up two runs, I can't be unhappy with that. You know what I mean? That's a pitcher that, even though he knows he doesn't have his best stuff tonight, he's going to battle and he's going to give you and keep you in the ball game. And I think that it was a gutsy performance. I mean, ultimately the Blue Jays broke it open later on in the game, but. Yeah, I'm not too concerned about it. I think the Indians still probably are going to, wrap this up. If not in game five, then I think they'll do it in six at home.
Now, the question here is, do you think that the days off between the Texas series and this Cleveland series, Cleveland having to obviously, well, Cleveland actually played, they both swept their series on the same day. But do you think that the days off, considering the fact that the Jays were the team that was just on fire with the bats, really seems to have conspired against them?
Yes, I have to say yes. I think bats, offensively, it's easier to get out of a rhythm. And if you guys are hot, the last thing you want to do is have a break in play. We see it in the All-Star game all the time. During the All-Star break, teams go in there hot, or players go in there swinging the bat really well. They come back from the break, second half doesn't really get off to a hot start. They start to scuffle, and then it becomes a mental thing, and then it drags on. And we've seen this time and time again, man. I think ultimately, hitters are that way. If they're hot and the team feeds off of that, if one guy's doing well and you see the pitchers on the ropes, they all feed on that in the lineup like the Blue Jays, you don't want them to get into that situation, right? So I do think that the days off really did affect them. I think that the Indians, because they're more pitching, rely more on pitching, that the breakup and play and the time off really benefited them. It allowed them to set up their rotation. It allowed them to make sure that all their guys were, all their ducks were in a row. And I think that I'm a big fan of pitching. I think pitching will get you farther than hitting every day of the week. So I really do think that Cleveland set themselves up for better position, especially not just the way the roster is built, but because of the time off. I do think it affected the Blue Jays terribly.
I fully agree with you. Now, the other thing that's come into the fore here is the fact that my favorite Blue Jay of them all, Jose Bautista, Joey Bautista, for everybody knows, I'm not a huge fan of his. He went out and immediately, went to the press basically complaining that the umpiring in the series has been extremely one-sided and that Cleveland's getting the benefit of it. I haven't seen anything that really indicates that. Neither of these teams are hitting, so I don't exactly see it as if the umpires are favoring Cleveland to a point where it's actually influencing the games.
I wouldn't say that either, man. I think you know, they were really upset in Cleveland because they felt that the umpire was giving their pitch, Cleveland's pitchers a couple of inches off the plate and really giving them an outside zone. I think it was Laz Diaz, to be honest. And ultimately for me is, you know, as a hitter, you shouldn't have to acclimate to we've discussed this, you know, as a hitter, you shouldn't have to acclimate to every umpire strike zone. As a pitcher, of course, you're going to take advantage of the extra inches. The thing there is, umpires tend to have a bias on pitchers that have a reputation for throwing strikes. So the Indians have that reputation of being a good pitching ball club. So I think sometimes umpires can be a little more lenient with the strike zone and expand it a little more for guys that consistently hit that strike zone. And I think that early on in the series, I do think that whether it's part of the game, Justin, it's always been in the fabric of the game, right? The umpire and balls and strikes. So it's not really an excuse, but the fact that the Blue Jays allowed that to really irk them to the level that they did has cost them dearly. It's cost them severely, man. The Indians are capitalizing completely on that, and they're going to continue to do that. If you're going to give me 2 inches off the plate, you're going to Greg Maddux it, bro. You're going to take the 2 inches and try for three.
Yeah, well, I mean, I happen to think that this Jays team needs to stop worrying about every possible distraction they can. I mean, what was it? A few weeks ago, they were more annoyed with the media than they were with the Red Sox when they were trying to get when they were, you know, they were talking about media members that they were boycotting instead of concentrating on, you know, games down the stretch to try to get into the playoffs. Then you have this distraction with you know, Joey Bautista. I mean, they need to kind of just suck it up and play baseball. And to be perfectly honest, that propensity for distraction, I think it falls solely in one place. It's John Gibbons. He needs to get control of the team.
You just answered my question, man. I was going to ask you, do you think that falls on these players who are professionals, all of them veterans for the most part, if not 100% veterans of the game, who have a lot of them have been here before with the Blue Jays, if not with other ball clubs. Do you think that I was going to ask you, do you think it solely falls on Gibbons, or do you think that actually there's a little bit of share of the blame here? Because I think these players should be experienced enough to not allow this to get under their skin so much, man. I get it. He has to get control of his ball club. I get that 100%, man. I'm not arguing with that. But ultimately, as adults, as grown men, you should take that responsibility on yourself as a ball club. You know what I mean? You guys have to police yourself. If somebody's getting, you know, mopey and stuff, the other man should pick him up and be like, hey, dude, come on. A lot of ball game left to play. Still in this series. Let's do it. I think they just hang in their heads. Woe is me. And it's disappointing to see, man, because I thought the Blue Jays were definitely going to have a little bit more fight than this.
But I fully agree with you, man. Look at the core of this team. Joey Bautista, 35. Josh Donaldson, 30. Juan Encarnacion, 34. Troy Tulowitzki, 30. Russell Martin, I think he's 32. Michael Saunders, I believe he's 29. I mean, those are basically outside Kevin Pillar, every single position player who's seeing playing time every single day is not just a veteran, but a veteran on the other side of 30 who's been around for a while, who knows that they have a shot at winning a World Series. What the hell is wrong with these guys?
Yeah, I don't get it, man. I don't get it. I don't understand what they want handed to them or what they feel entitled is to them or whatever, but they are definitely acting like prima donnas and divas. And under the circumstances and the position that you're in to be able to get to a World Series, this is not the time. This is not the place. You got to pick each other up. You got to pick yourself up from the bootstraps and fight. And I don't see that in the Blue Jays. I don't see that camaraderie. I don't see that want to succeed for the next guy in line. And in Cleveland, we're seeing the polar opposite of what we're seeing in Toronto. They're so excited to play together. They're so excited to have this opportunity. They are picking each other up. It's a different guy every night doing the business.
It's sort of a different guy every night, because the reality is every single day, regardless if it's offense, defense, base hitting, base running in the field, Francisco Lindor makes one or two plays that you just sit there and stare at and you're like, wow. This kid's really good.
Oh, absolutely, man. But it's not a one-man show. Absolutely not. But I agree with you. Francisco Lindor is a special talent, and he has proven himself to be that this October. He is definitely showing, you know, how good of a ball player he is. And I'm looking forward to seeing him for many, many years to come. The I just think that offensively and the way this team is built, they're not necessarily, you know, going to outscore you all the time. They're not necessarily going to put up big runs. But in this series, they have had some big hits from multiple people to get them ahead and to really close these games out. And a lot has to do with Andrew Miller coming in and then putting out fires in very important spots. Tito Francona hasn't really made a mistake this entire series. I think there's a lot to be said for that, and they're really playing it as a team from manager all the way down. I think that what Cleveland is showing that, you know, the sum of its parts is greater than, you know, the individuals, and the Blue Jays are not really coming together as a team, as we probably saw against Toronto. We saw them smiling. We saw them happy. And now it's just, you know, woe is me. And you can't come into the postseason and ever have that mindset, because there's no way in hell you're going to come back from a tough position if you're going to be in a negative mind state. It's not going to happen, bro.
Yeah, and also front running doesn't really help you. I mean, you need to know how to come back. We saw it last year. This happened in Toronto last year. They played against a Royals team, which, you know, I have nothing but respect for that Royals team, despite the fact that, you know, they ruined a fall for me, because of the fact that they were a team that just didn't quit. And they were death by a million paper cuts. And it was a terrible way to see your team lose, because you could see it happen, but instead of the home run, which is ripping the Band-Aid off, they do it with 15 straight singles, which is painful. But that's something the Jays don't have in them. They don't seem to just have that fight that they say, we've gone down in this game, we need to come back. Like, if they don't get out in front like they did today, they don't win.
Exactly. And that's what I mean, man. Like you said, it's the front runner mentality. We've seen in this playoffs, man, the teams that are really going at it and really look like they have a really good chance, the Indians, the Dodgers, the Cubs have been this way throughout the season. I know the Cubs have won a lot of ball games and been ahead a lot, but they also show that type of grit. They also show the ability to come back from games, win a closed game. And then you don't win 103 games in a season if you don't. And the Dodgers have proven that as well. And I just think the Blue Jays are the oddball right now, and that's not good. That's not good in this type of year. In this time of the year, you got to really go out there and you really got to just pick each other up, man. I mean, it's hard. I get it, but ultimately, dude, this is your chance, and you don't know when you're going to be back. And to just mope, you're just giving away your opportunity, man. And it's disappointing to see for me. It's just disappointing to see any team get this far, just to capitulate in this manner and to not have. And to have little to no pride in the way they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see the Jays come back into this a little bit, just because of the fact that, you know, it makes for a better series. Ideally, for me, both as a neutral observer, you know, my overall tendency is to want to see Cleveland win, just because of the fact that, you know, I don't want to particularly see the Cubs or Dodgers win before the Mets do, but I have no problem with it because of the fact that I don't live in Chicago or Los Angeles. They're not division rivals. I'd like to see Cleveland get there just because of the fact they've been a downtrodden franchise. The Jays, on the other hand, they've presented themselves as entirely unlikable. But I want to go to talk about Andrew Miller, because we mentioned him briefly, but this guy deserves his due. Thus far in the postseason, he's appeared in 5 games, pitched 9 innings. He's given up 4 hits, 2 walks, and in those 9 innings, he struck out 20, with a save and 3 holds, works out to a .67 whip, and the ERA is still perfect. What is it about him that makes him so good?
It's his selflessness, man. It's his ability to adapt to any situation, to say, give me the ball when you need me. It's his ability to have confidence in his stuff and know that he's going to go out there and do the job. He knows that he is the guy that is going to keep his team in the ball game when the chips are, you know, out on the wall and everything's stacked against you and your back's against the wall and we really need you to come through. Andrew Miller has been that guy. And for me, that's what impresses me, man. It's the fact that he has such great stuff is one thing, but the fact that his mental makeup and his ability to adapt to any situation, to go in there and say, Tito, whatever you need me, let's do it. That's a rarity. And I think it shows a lot what the team means to him, and also what this run means to him. I'm very impressed by it. The pitching itself it speaks for itself, Justin. He's been phenomenal. Like you said, the numbers speak for themselves. And I don't see that changing anytime. I think that Andrew Miller is – we're going to see a lot of copycats in the years to come of the Andrew Miller mold.
Yeah, the only thing that makes Andrew Miller's season seem slightly less impressive is Zach Britton's season. Now, it sucks that I'm thinking about it that way, because I should be able to just look at what he did and just think about it. It's like, wow, you know what? That in and of itself is unreal. He actually probably should get a few Cy Young votes, especially now that I'm looking at his full season numbers. 74 innings pitched, 10-1 record, win-loss, 12 saves, wow. 26 holds, and in the 74 innings, 123 strikeouts, a .69 whip. This guy is an absolute monster.
I know we don't have these stats, like, on us, dude, but I would like to know how many pitchers have won 10 games, had 10 saves, and have had 20 holds in a season.
There's probably not very many.
Yeah, if any.
The only guy I could think of that might have done that at some point in his career is probably either Gossage or Eckersley are the two that I can think of.
I'm going to look that up, and next week we'll talk about that, because I think that, like you said, what he's doing and those numbers that you just read off for the listener shows that this might be a one-off season that we might not ever see again, man, the way he's being used. Either that, or we're going to see the game revolutionize and the bullpen revolutionize again, and we're going to go back to seeing pitchers pitch when they're needed, as opposed to you're the seventh inning guy, you're my eighth inning guy, you're my lefty specialist, and you're my ninth inning guy. It gets so redundant, bro, and I'm very, very – it's very refreshing to see managers and players be willing to adapt to the situation and put team first. And I mean, Andrew Miller is going to get paid. He gets paid really well, right? But as a closer, you expect people to make so much more money, and then the ego comes. And for him, it's like, dude, just pay me. It doesn't matter. Whenever you need to use me, let's do it. And I commend him for that, man, because in this modern times, in this modern game, and in modern sports in general, we don't see that type of selflessness nearly enough.
No, especially also considering the fact that you look at the team that gave him the contract he has. When have you ever seen someone not be able to get an extra few million bucks out of the New York Yankees?
No, you're right. You're right.
Now, before we close, there's two brief odds and ends to discuss. The first of which is Tony La Russa has been reassigned within the Diamondbacks organization.
Oh, I didn't even hear this.
Yeah,
go ahead, tell me.
He's been given a new position. It's been undefined. They haven't fired him, but it basically looks like Tony La Russa has been neutered.
He said undefined.
Undefined.
Oh, man.
The best thing I saw about it was effectively someone tweeting, "This is Tony La Russa's new desk," and it was a picture of Milton in the basement in Office Space.
Oh,
and
God bless. That's hilarious.
Yeah, that made me feel good about things, because, you know, the only person who would ever use more relievers in an inning that Dusty used in the seventh inning of Game 5 is La Russa, and he would only do it just to top Dusty.
You're 100% spot on, man. Actually, since I've been traveling, you know, man, I've been in Boston. I'm in Boston now. I'm doing this. I hadn't heard any of that. I haven't been able to read up on what's going on outside of the LCS and the playoffs. I am, like you, probably very happy for the Diamondbacks, because I'm sure that wasn't an easy decision with as much clout as Tony La Russa has in the baseball world. But it's one that needed to be made. It's not Dave Stewart. It's not the manager. It's definitely goes from the top down. And undefined role is probably what he deserves.
Yeah. I mean, basically, this is the Lifetime Achievement Award he receives, which is you don't get fired from your last job in baseball. You can quit when you want.
Yeah, and hopefully sooner than later, they say.
Yeah, I don't think he deserves that, but that's just me. That's just my thought about it. And then finally, for the last word, we just want to wish Yoenis Cespedes a very happy 31st birthday.
Absolutely, man. Happy birthday, Yo. You make a lot of Mets fans happy, bro. And, my brother's one, you're one. And I think with a healthy Yo, you guys always have a chance, man. And he's been the, you know, without Yo, you guys don't get to the World Series last year. And it says a lot about him, and it's nice to see him resign. When he resigned with you guys, it was nice. So he's committed to the Mets. He sees something in you guys. He loves New York, and happy birthday, Yo. You deserve it, man.
Yeah, no, don't opt out of your contract, please. Thank you.
I don't know. I don't think he will.
I think he will. It's just too much money, but I think that the Mets still have a good shot at keeping him. That said, that broke our moratorium of the exactly a week of not talking about the New York Mets. I just wanted to wish him a happy birthday.
We've done this many times. We say we're not going to talk about something. Kurt Schilling is one that's won, and you know, we break that rule almost weekly as well.
I've never said I won't talk about Kurt Schilling.
That's a lie. I'm going to look it up, and we are going to play it, and I'm going to play it on the next podcast. What?
Okay. All right. Well, then I might talk about Kirk Schilling. But that's it from us this week. You know, you've gotten yourself the East Coast edition of the seventh inning stretch, finally being recorded in the same time zone. We wish all of our listeners a good week, and let's watch some more postseason baseball.
Absolutely. Go Dodgers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do. And start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.